Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where every episode we talk about, pretty much, the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. You can also email our show at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we're on Facebook, and I'm on Facebook now. Whoa. And we also have a website, which is like a companion piece. It's like the DVD extras for our show, and it's at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And that's run by Doug Zavisha, who was doing Doom Patrol stuff before we even thought of it on that blog. And we are available on the show. I mean, not me, but and not Mike, but the show is available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yes, and today I was reading on Comicosity, and they had a story about a... Well, let me get this straight. It's a Mexican comic that was done for the French embassy in Mexico. They did a 24-hour comic creation thing where people created comics in a full 24-page comic in 24 hours. And someone came up with one called Cuervo Eléctrico, which was by H.Z. Santarrigo. Or some, I've really butchered the names, but anyway, I was reading about this, and it looks like a really cool comic, female protagonist with electrical powers. It looks very different to everything that's around today, and it's a graphic novel, so that's very exciting. So cool. Check that out, something different. You're not going to see that on CBR or Newsarama. Yeah.
No, not at all.
Yes, and we are joined today by a special person. It's Clinton Robson, who's the Coffee and Comics man. He does the Coffee and Comics blog, and recently he doubled down and did the Coffee and Comics podcast, which is amazing. And he is the man that Zatanna calls Nosbor Not Nuke.
Well, thank you for that wonderful introduction. I don't know that I could have expected anything better.
You never know what to expect on Waiting for Doom.
Yeah, and we script everything closely, but we never stick to it. So that's what comes out. So, Clinton, tell us about yourself. This is a Doom Patrol podcast, but today we're doing something special. So this is the JL May episode of this podcast. So JL May, for those of you who don't know, it's a crossover when people, you know, podcasts get together and we pick a comic that's too big for one podcast to do, and we split it all up by issues, so across several podcasts. So this is JL May episode, and we're covering Justice, the Alex Ross, Jim Kruger, Doug Braithwaite series. 12 issues, double-sized, took ages to come out if I remember. But Clinton, we've called you in. I mean, there's a Doom Patrol element in this issue, so we thought we'd have a special guest on. So Clinton, how did you come to get into comics and stuff like that, and what's your experience with the Doom Patrol? Two questions at once.
Well, I don't know that I ever knew a time without superheroes. I kind of got in right at the end of the Super Friends and all that kind of run, mostly in reruns, I guess, since I was kind of actually born after most of it. But excuse me. But no, I got into comics probably, well, my cousin read comics. I got a few of his hand-me-downs, but seriously got into comics right at the start of the 90s. You know, X-Men had just hit real big, mm-hmm. But DC's really where I love to hang my hat. So, as for the Doom Patrol, gosh, I think my first real experience with the Doom Patrol was the Suicide Squad Doom Patrol team up.
Oh yeah,
which didn't really go over well and didn't leave a lasting impression for that version of the Doom Patrol for me.
Fair enough, you know, we love honesty on the show, yes.
Yeah. So it was a few years later, well, let's just go ahead and say it was probably a whole decade later when I read JLA Year One and came across that version of the Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
JLA Year One was, of course, the subject of JLMA last year.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're bringing it full circle for us, Clinton. So, Clinton, you, judging from your accent, you're from the Asian regions, or?
Something like that, yes. No, I'm from about as middle America as you can get.
Ah.
Well, slightly south.
Right.
From the amazing to look at, but not necessarily the best politically, state of Oklahoma.
Okay.
Ah, I'm well familiar with the musical.
Well, one part of that musical very much is true. The wind does come whipping down the plains.
Yeah.
Or sweeping down the plains. Whatever the lyric is, I'm not as familiar with. Are you saying you're mostly familiar with it because Hugh Jackman was curly?
Oh, dear. Look, can we just have one app where we don't talk about Hugh Jackman?
Well, we can always talk about Crocodile Dundee.
All right. You're one step away from bringing up Men at Work, and that's when we'll take you off this call.
Hey, she did make me a Vegemite sandwich.
Oh.
All right.
Best outro, folks.
Yellow card, Clint. Okay. Anyway.
I don't follow soccer, so that's fine. Yellow card, I get, that's like a yellow light, right? You just speed up.
Not anyway, quite, no.
Usually at this point in the show, we talk about what our week has been like in comics or other things that we want to mention. So we'll let our guest go first. Clinton, how's your week been in comics and nerd stuff?
My week in comics has been wonderful. Aside from rereading Justice, I've been picking up the Superman books, Action and Superman, as well as New Superman, Super Sons, basically anything with Super on the cover. With the exception of Superwoman. I'm afraid I had to drop that one.
Okay.
Ah.
But if, other than that, Green Arrow, Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns, it's all been good for me.
So you're liking Rebirth?
I am loving Rebirth. I may be in the minority as far as podcasters go, but Rebirth works on me so well.
You're in good company here then, because I think, well, I know I'm enjoying it as well.
I'm not hating it. That's what I'll say.
Fair enough.
Anyway, Mike, how's things been with you?
Comic-wise, a bit quiet. I've really only been reading the series we'll be talking about on this episode, the Justice series. So that's taken up a lot of my reading time. Other than that, I went and saw Spider-Bait on Saturday night last weekend.
Spider-Bait,
yes. Awesome Australian band doing, as seems to be the popular thing to do with bands these days, doing like the 20th anniversary tour of one of their albums, which was Ivy and the Big Apple, and they play it basically from start to finish and then do an encore with lots of other cool songs they do. So that was a good night out. So, yeah, other than that, you know, it's been a week. Yeah. How about you, Paul?
Yeah, no, I had a weekend in Sydney. My daughter turned 18, which is, it's like coming of age for Americans turning 21. So, but yeah, so she can drink now and all that sort of stuff. But she doesn't, which is freaking out a lot of people. But,
that's not Australian.
No, I know.
Christ.
Yeah, but we had a big party for her. We gave her her birthday present, which means I'm going to be in Japan in a month's time.
Ooh, nice. Wow.
Taking her to Japan for her birthday, so because she loves everything of the Japanese culture.
Cool.
Well, not everything. I mean, all the straight stuff, and yeah, not right. The weird kinky schoolgirl. Anyway, I think let's move on then.
Let's go have a look at what's going down on Derrington Way, shall we?
Yep, let's. So, in the world of Derrington and Way, the news is that Doom Patrol issue number 8 has been resolicited. So we have the new solicitation for Doom Patrol number 8, which is pretty much exactly the same as the old solicitation for Doom Patrol number 8, which was cancelled. But let's just run through it again. It's written by Jared Way with art and cover by Nick Darrington. And there's a variant cover by James O'Barr from The Crow. Gaw, gaw. And this is the description of the issue. What is, and it looks like it's got asterisks in it, but it looks like the word shit. And why is everyone eating it? Cliff doesn't like it, but Casey can't get enough. Sure, Cliff doesn't like a lot of stuff, but that doesn't mean he's wrong to be suspicious this time around. Meanwhile, we find out where Lotion the Cat has got off to and how his journey has changed him. Life on the streets has made him an entirely different animal. And this is a resolicit. It's on sale August 30th. It's 32 pages, costs $3.99 US, and it is for mature readers. But we can read it.
Phew. That's good news.
Yeah. And other than that, it's been fairly quiet. There was a picture put up on Tumblr of Negative Man sitting in a cafe at a table.
Right.
So and it looked like it was from the Mike Allred issue number 7, which is coming out in about a month's time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it'd be interesting to see where this cafe is, what he's ordering, that sort of thing. But for now, we can only speculate.
Right.
And that's all that's happening on Darrington Way this week.
And now it's time for everyone's favourite, very serious segment of the show, where friends and fans of the show help out Paul with getting certain issues of a certain run. And this segment we like to call...
Burn for you. What am I going?
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for Burn For You. We have a little Burn For You update. I have purchased on eBay issue 5. I found that with a reasonable price for postage. So issue 5 is now on its way to me, according to the little eBay notifications that I've received. But in other more exciting news, I did receive a parcel this week from Darren and Ruth Sutherland, and it contained Doom Patrol number 4 by John Byrne. It contained Doom Patrol number 13 by John Byrne and Doom Patrol number 16 by John Byrne. So at this tally, we have 7 of the issues that we needed off the list now. We still need others. If you refer to my Twitter feed, you'll see which ones I need. We really appreciate your help. Doug Zavisha has also found one and is hoping to find more. But exciting times, tense times. But anyone
so close.
Yes, but I did get the issue which has Rita kissing Cliff Steele on the cover, the robot, God. Which I think is the quintessential John Byrne issue of that Doom Patrol run. And
it's,
you know,
it's so wrong.
Yeah.
It's so wrong.
It's the one I most wanted to get out of this run. I have that, so I consider that a major victory. But what do you get out of this? If anyone who sends me a Doom Patrol issue will get an exclusive Waiting for Doom postcard, which are hot off the press. I have a huge pile of them. They have original art done by my daughter of the Doom Patrol. That sounds dodgier than it actually looks. It's really cool.
I'll let the listeners know that I actually commissioned the artwork originally, and I'm very happy with it. And people that have followed me online for a while know that I love getting Doom Patrol commissions, and this is one of the best ones. This is really good, and it's a little bit different, but that's what makes it great. So it's really cool. Trust me, guys. Yeah. Trust me.
And we have deliberately kept the image offline so people can't. You know, the only way to see it is to get involved in the contest. Anyway, that's it for Burn For You. Think about it. You know, talk to your loved ones about it. Work out what's right for you. And a special shout out to all our listeners who are on the toilet at this time.
Yes. But yes.
Remember, wash your hands. This is a classy podcast.
I'm sorry, Clinton. Oh, dear. Hey, can anyone else hear that ticking?
Yeah, I can. Ticking. Cool.
It's the sound of my life falling away second by second.
Hey, you signed up for this.
True.
Oh, but thank goodness you're not hearing things, Clinton. It actually is the Doom Clock. So yes, looking upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last time we had a Doom Patrol book in our hands was a mere 4 weeks ago, issue 6 of volume 6, which we covered back in episode 92, which showed us the Vectra's plans for more Danny Burgers being put to a stop, and the Patrol was reunited, for the most part, at this stage. Issue 7 is due out July 26th, a mere 9 weeks away.
Ooh.
Closer. Won't wait too much longer, gang. But this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for $2.50 on May 25th of 2005, with a cover date of July of that year, was Doom Patrol number 12 from Volume 4 by John Byrne.
I don't have that one.
Hear that, kids? Doom Patrol number 12, Byrne for you. This issue was titled How to Kill a Ghost, and it continued to reveal the Chief's origins in this incarnation of the Patrol as his past came back to haunt him. Meanwhile, another member of the team decided to leave the Patrol.
No.
Yes. I won't tell you who because it's... Yeah, well. It may or may not be someone whose name I sometimes mispronounce. But we won't go there. So yes, we're yet to cover the John Byrne run in depth at all, though we have provided an overview of the series all the way back in episode seven from February of 2015. So you can check that one out for more. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
When you talk about comics, does it sound something like this?
Look, you can't put the Superman number 77s with the 200s. They haven't even discovered red kryptonite yet. And you can't put the number 98 with the 300s. Lori Lamaris hasn't even been introduced.
Or maybe it sounds a little more like this.
You think Mighty Mouse could beat up Superman?
What are you, cracked?
Why not? I saw the other day he was carrying 5 elephants in one hand.
Boy, you don't know nothing. Mighty Mouse is a cartoon. Superman is a real guy. No way a cartoon could beat up a real guy.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. It would be a good fight, though.
Hello, I am the constantly caffeinated Clinton Robinson, and my comics discussions can go to both extremes, but generally fall somewhere in between. On the Coffee and Comics podcast, I will review comic stories and other comics-related topics that can be enjoyed over a cup of coffee. So pour the coffee, or other beverage of choice, and join me on the Coffee and Comics podcast, available on iTunes and coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com.
It's the part of the show that we call Doomsplaining, which is about explaining things to do with Doom Patrol. And this comic that we're talking about today has a bit to do with the Doom Patrol, not as much as Mike wants, I think, but enough to justify this whole endeavor. So we are talking about Justice number 11, which is the 11th part of the JLMA podcast crossover. So hopefully you've listened to 10 other comic podcasts before you came here. And most recently, you've listened to The Power of Fishnets, which is Ryan Daly's fetish show about fishnet wearing superhero ladies, which is Zatanna and Black Canary primarily. Yeah, but that's only the tip of the iceberg of Ryan Daly's fetishes. Anyway, let's move on to the show. So we're going to talk about Justice number 11, which came out on April 25th of 2007, but was cover dated June 2007. It cost $3.50, which is pretty pricey. Some comics are cheaper than that today, but it is 40 pages, and it's got a light painted art. It's got a beautiful painted cover. It was written by Jim Kruger. It was plotted by Alex Ross, who also inked the book. Well, painted, I think, technically. Mm. It was penciled by Doug Braithwaite, and it was lettered by Todd Klein, who we love, who does the Doom Patrol today.
Oh, true, yes.
Yeah. And it shows Sinestro, the Green Lantern villain, and Green Lantern, the Green Lantern hero, fist pumping on the cover.
It's pretty angry looking fist bump, though.
Yeah, there's a fair bit of energy in that fist bump. A
little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly the face I have every time I fist bump, though.
Wow.
Which ones, Sinestro or Hal?
Mostly Hal.
Okay.
That look of revulsion.
You're not a fan of fist bumping then, Clinton?
No, not especially. I'm old.
Right. Yeah, young people and their weird social interactions.
All right, let's move on. Mike, you were going to take us through the issue.
I will, and I'll even start off with a recap of where we're at so far in the whole Justice series. So yes, a golden age of mankind is being ushered in. A time where the sick and disabled are cured, where lush forests and vegetation springs to life in deserts, where shiny new cities are built to house humanity. And it's all thanks to the Legion of Doom?
What?
Yes, spurred on by shared dreams of an impending apocalypse, the villains of the DC Universe have banded together to do what the Justice League haven't been able to do, despite their powers and gifts. And that is to make the world a better place to live. But where is the Justice League, and what exactly are those heroes doing during all of this benevolence? Well, unbeknown to the rest of the world, they're actually under attack from those very same villains, being taken out one by one so that they can't stop the villains' actual plan, which will see them, under the leadership of Lex Luthor, Brainiac, and Gorilla Grodd, take over the world. Of course. Of course, the heroes survive the attacks, and together they uncover the true plans of the Legion of Doom. So when we last saw our heroes, in issue 10, they had come up with their own plan to stop the Legion, shielding themselves from any further possible mind control attacks and taking the fight straight to the villains. And as we open this issue, issue 11, we see that very same fight is continuing, although now the Joker has decided to join in by blowing up buildings in the city to show just how annoyed he is that the Legion of Doom left him out. And the heroes manage to surprise the villains a couple of times during this battle with the armored Superman that Parasite is about to hit with kryptonite, which he ripped straight out of Metallo's chest. Ouch. That actually turns out to be a disguised Captain Marvel. Ha ha! And Green Lantern reveals the blue kryptonite he's been concealing just in time to take out Bizarro. Captain Marvel gets the upper hand literally on Black Adam, choking him into submission and forcing him to say the magic word, and which will revert him to a weakened mortal. And then suddenly the Green Lantern John Stewart appears, taking to the air, unleashing the energy of his power ring to wipe out Brainiac's nanotechnology, as well as wipe the minds of the villains from any knowledge of the heroes' identities and friends, freeing all of them from Brainiac's control. Hooray! On the ground, though, the heroes have won this battle, but the war isn't over. Martian Manhunter, having read Gorilla Grodd's mind, reveals to the heroes that Brainiac's nanotechnology has taken control of the weapon systems of the world's governments. So every weapon of mass destruction in the world is now under Brainiac's control. And he's just initiated the countdown sequence. What began as a nightmare vision to elicit the help of the world's supervillains is now becoming reality. As a group prepares to return their rescued friends and family to the safety of the Fortress of Solitude, the action now turns to the sky above them, where another fight rages, this time between Green Lantern Hal Jordan and his arch-enemy Sinestro. Realizing he's losing the fight, Sinestro goads Jordan into finishing him, to have his vengeance. Knowing he's won, Hal stands defiantly over the alien and says, "This isn't about vengeance, Sinestro, it's justice." Oh yeah.
Hal chapter 11.
Say that. Yeah, it's justice chapter 11. Haha. Meanwhile, the other heroes have followed Aquaman in his race to save his infant son from Brainiac. Arriving in a different city via teleporter, they're confronted by an entire army of Brainiac robots, as well as the civilians acting under the mind control of the nanotechnology. So the heroes are now fighting a battle on two fronts, one of which they don't really want to win, otherwise they'll damage everyone in it. However, Green Lantern arrives just in time to unleash the energy of his power ring again, and the civilians are saved as the nanobots are eradicated, while the Brainiac army is defeated. And the issue ends with the revelation that the ruler of this particular city is Scarecrow. And there's a brief pause whilst he gathers his wits, now that he's no longer under Brainiac's control, but he suddenly releases his fear toxin into the mass of civilians and tells the heroes, "You can try to stop me, or you can stop them from killing each other." Ha ha ha. He doesn't actually laugh like that. I just imagine him laughing like that. But that's Justice 11. It's a bit full on.
It is full on. Yeah, I think you're right there, Mike. The story has been gathering speed and density, and it sort of reaches peak density of this issue. There's so much going on, whereas before you've had lots of moments for things to breathe and lots of sort of clever machinations, like the heroes have been outwitting the villains here and there and doing sneaky things. Mm-hmm. Whereas it all gathers pace and just gets a bit frenetic and crazy here.
Yes, there's a lot going on in this issue, and the pages are fairly jam-packed with characters doing stuff or fighting other characters. There's a lot going on in it.
Clinton, what stood out to you?
Well, if we really have to focus on it, well, mostly the fight between Hal and Sinestro, I'll be honest, but I'm going to get it out of the way early. Alex Ross must really like Rita Farr.
Whatever makes you say that, Clinton?
Because in the nice, you know, huge panel of her, no pun intended, smacking Giganta, we get a shag-worthy upskirt shot.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. I mean, I'll come clean. This is why I picked this issue for us. As one of the organizers of this crossover, I had dibs on this before it even, you know, I started allocating issues because I wanted this fight where Rita suddenly taps Giganta on the shoulder and smacks her. And Giganta is a giant lady, and Rita is able to grow to giant size. So it's like the a fight between two 50-foot women. And Giganta really goes down fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad you clarified that there, because I thought you were saying that it was the upskirt panel that was the reason you chose this one for this show.
That was what I thought he was leading to as well. Mm. It was kind of like, are we sure we're not on the Fire and Water Network?
Yes. Yeah, I will admit, there's not a lot of Doom Patrol action in this issue itself. I counted maybe 8 panels. The
yep.
majority of which are Rita fighting Giganta. Or there's one of her holding Robot Man's head after the fight's finished. But yeah, I mean, they did make an appearance and actually had some dialogue earlier in the series, which was nice. But yeah, this one's a little bit light on Patrol goodness. Although yeah, the Rita fight is cool.
Yeah, the issue before probably had an equal amount of Doom Patrol and probably a little bit more, but they're getting their butts kicked there, and Cliff is getting ripped to pieces, which, you know, we always say take a drink when that happens in a comic, because it is, you know, if you are a robot person, you will always get taken apart in the comics. It's just the fact of life. Look at Red Tornado, look at Cliff Steele. You know, anyone like that gets pulled apart all the time. Mm. Yes, but... Yeah, there isn't that much Doom Patrol in here, but what it is, I think it's satisfying. I'm very satisfied with the Doom Patrol stuff. I'll be the first to say I think the plotting sort of just falls apart a little bit in this issue.
I will concur.
Yeah, I think they're trying really hard to make it epic between Hal and Sinestro, and it's just a little bit corny. And yeah, but I mean. The art is incredible. So Doug Braithwaite, who is the artist, he did all the pencils. And he actually has a Doom Patrol connection. Did you know that he did the pencils for Doom Patrol 25 in the Morrison run, the Imaginary Friends issue with Dorothy?
I had forgotten that.
Yeah. So anyway, so he does a great job. And the splashed page where all the heroes are in action – taking out Brainiac robots is incredible. You know, you've got everyone in the sky, people on the ground, there's robots getting ripped apart everywhere, there's, you know, Black Canaries taking some out, there's robots with arrows in them from Green Arrow, Metamorphos turn into like a wall of water that's drowning them, and yeah, it's really quite impressive. But I think that's probably my favorite page. And you've got Rita chucking Brainiac robots into the air. But, yeah, I mean, there's things that I wasn't sure what was happening. Like, the very first page of this comic has all the villains sort of bathed in yellow light. It took me ages to work out that they've just teleported there. I thought they were just standing around like it was an 80s video clip, and they'd found a dramatic place to stand, like the start of Xanadu.
Oh, hello. Sorry, someone said Xanadu. What?
Hey, nothing yeah. wrong with Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, no, I love her. I mean, well. Yeah. Clinton, what else did you like about this issue?
Okay, you guys were talking about the art. Let's look at the crowd scene where Rita's actually holding Robot Man's head.
Oh,
it's the
yeah.
easiest way to describe it. Did anybody notice that Red Tornado is actually taking off a mask?
Yes.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
And it's the exact same mask underneath. You know, it's still his robot face. Same design and everything. But yeah. The part that really caught me about this, and this is probably just me, but Steve Trevor, I had to look at this three different times to realize that was not John Constantine.
It is very... He does look a lot like Constantine in that picture, yes.
Yeah, and you can't really tell that it's, you know, his uniform as opposed to a trench coat.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, there's not enough detail on it.
Yeah.
Either that or I just prefer Constantine to Steve Trevor about, you know, a million times over, but
who doesn't? An interesting ship there, Wonder Woman and John Constantine.
It's different. Okay. Now, in front of John Stewart, is that Lois Lane? And what is she holding?
No, I think that might be... they're making out with Superman.
Yeah, Supes is locking lips with Lois to the left of him. I thought it might be maybe...
Jean Laurent.
Yes, holding the Atom.
Ah, yes.
Okay.
Can't really tell what she's holding there. I need the Absolute Edition. This is too small.
Yes. Well, it took me forever to realize that Lana Lang is over there next to Superman. I thought it was a long-haired Jimmy until I realized Jimmy's holding a camera over behind Lois, you know.
Right.
Could be Wilma Flintstone.
I think this was a bit before DC was doing Flintstone comics.
Yeah.
I think, as good as the art is, I think that's part of the problem with this series as it goes along. You have to admit, it's very ambitious. And obviously Ross is really enjoying playing in the DC sandpit. And I've noticed as the story goes along, and particularly in this issue, he tries to cram so much in there, like not just the number of bodies, but also the action that's going on, that sometimes it's hard to comprehend exactly what's going on. And like, you know, we've just discussed then that we're trying to figure out who's who sort of thing. That sort of thing detracted from the series for me as it went along. Some of the panel layouts were a little bit confusing, trying to keep up with the action as to what was happening. But hey, that's just my take on it. So.
Yeah, I actually find myself very concerned about, is Negative Man dead at this point? Because we see him getting sort of blasted in the previous issue, and he's not in these group shots. Gar Logan was running around as a beast in many of the scenes in the earlier issues. He seems to have gone.
Yep.
I guess the Chief never rolled out into this battle.
No.
Yeah.
He's at home safely watching it all on the giant monitors.
Eating chocolate.
Yes.
At least he's not a head in a tray this time.
Yeah. So Rita seems to be sole survivor.
Yeah.
Mm.
You were asking about Gar Logan. He shows up with the group whenever they teleport and start going after Aquaman's son.
Ah, okay.
He's a giant green pterodactyl in the background.
You've been reading ahead.
Right.
Ah.
No, I'm just flipping through the pages.
Yeah, it's all right. Right near the end there, there's... When they're on the bridge with the civilians, and there's Mary Marvel and Supergirl, and there's a green pterodactyl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, you get a very prominent Robin, Zatanna, all that right there.
Yeah.
It's one of Rita's panels. We should know this.
There's so few of them.
Wow. It's really dense.
Yeah.
This is the most I've ever worried about where Gar Logan is.
I actually thought it was a real compliment that Alex Ross, Jim Kruger, and all them, they wanted to use the Doom Patrol in the book because, there's a lot of characters who get left out who could be put in.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain time and place feeling to it, which is probably late 60s. Comic Reflections went into this on their podcast, which was very good. But I took it as a real badge of honor that the Doom Patrol were included in this It certainly made our involvement more justified. yeah, but I mean, I must confess, I have no background with the Super Friends and Challenge of the Super Friends and all that. That is just... All that bypassed me. I think I was too old to be interested in the time and not a comic reader till I turned into an adult. So I just missed all that. So, you know, I always go, what is that toy man? Why is it puppet? And things like that throughout the series. But, yeah, I've got no affection or reverence for these versions. So... And I think the first time I ever read this, I collected it in the hardcovers as it came out, and they came out like 6 to 9 months apart. So there was quite a – and I didn't reread them as they came out. So when I was reading Volume 2, I'd completely forgotten everything that happened in Volume 1. And I was not the patrologist that I am now when I read this. So I remember being very surprised that Elastigirl could grow so large. That surprised me at the time because my familiarity with Doom Patrol was sort of Morrison era and just before that, and Rita had been dead the whole time I've been reading Doom Patrol at that point. So yeah, there was a bit I didn't know about it, like the embiggening of Rita was not something I was talking about.
It's a perfectly cromulent word.
It is.
Thank you.
But Clinton, judging by that gasp just then, I take it you're a big fan of the Super Friends.
I am. Like I said earlier, I think Super Friends was probably my first introduction to the comic book superheroes in general. Mm-hmm. That and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Oh, yes.
But as we all know, Miss Lion is the real star of that show and has no business being here, so... But no, yeah, Super Friends was definitely my bread and butter for first 5-6 years of my life. Wow. Aside from, you know, Masters of the Universe and Transformers and such.
All the hits. Wow.
Well, I don't want to age myself, but I always felt a little bit too old for Transformers and G.I. Joe cartoons and things like that. So
you and Rob Kelly can go call them colored boxes and be done with it.
I get Transformers. I get the appeal. Yeah, I wish the movies were different, but I get the appeal.
Yes, I gave up on those movies long ago.
Yes.
But my son loves them. I mean, he's super excited there's another one coming out. So, you know,
generation.
Yep.
Yeah, you take the enjoyment of something, you know, secondhand. So yeah, I'm glad that he likes them.
Well, I guess I must be the youngest in the group then, because... Super Friends, I remember seeing some episodes when I was really young, but I wasn't like following it sort of religiously because I would have been far too young to be able to do so. So yeah, these versions to me, they're kind of just like, okay, yeah, they're a take on the Justice League. And clearly when you read, you know, the history of the book itself, and when you listen to all the other episodes, it's quite clear that, you know, Ross is a fan of the Super Friends and the Challenge of the Super Friends. So that's sort of, you know, where he got his inspiration from, I guess. But for me, yeah, it's just like, okay, these are, you know, versions of the heroes and the villains at a point in time, but sort of with a grown-up slant, thanks to Ross and the writer.
In short, just think Super Friends is probably the most Bronze Age cartoon you could ever have.
Wow.
Without the social justice platforms of Teen Titans.
Okay.
Golly, I don't know how to follow that up.
I'm not trying to knock it either for anybody who thinks I am. I love the idea that Superman can move planets and that Sinestro can just step back and forth into the animator universe whenever he feels like it.
Oh, God.
Wow.
It's I don't know. I want to say campy, but that's not the word I want to use. It just is what it is. You either can accept it or you can't.
Yeah.
It was of a time and place.
Yes.
Is this where I confess I don't even like coffee?
I swear, I'm here to be the whipping boy.
Oh, no, it's a testament to your greatness that I will listen to your show even though I don't like coffee. For me, it's the comics podcast, not the coffee and comics podcast.
Well, don't feel bad. Greg Arujo was drinking tea the whole time he was on there with me.
Oh, good Lord.
Wow.
He only confessed to it afterward.
I only drink tea at work just to give myself 10 minutes of something else other than work.
Right.
Okay. Any other confessions?
How terribly British colony of you.
Wow, we're getting a little bit off topic here.
Yeah, sorry.
Isn't it hilarious that the British sent all of us to this amazing country that is so much better than their country? Yeah, anyway.
Any other thoughts on Justice, gentlemen?
Jim Kruger, he does a great job with the plotting, and he's trying really hard to give everyone a moment. This issue has mostly the narration by Hal Jordan. And it's funny, all throughout the series, there's all this sort of foreshadowing of what actually happens to Hal with Parallax and, you know, him losing control and, you know, taking absolute power and, you know, the dangers of that. They're sort of hinted at throughout the dialogue. I find that really interesting. I think that would be something that they would want to turn their back on and not acknowledge because, it doesn't seem very Alex Rossi, if you know what I mean. Rossi. But it's there and in the subtext. I think it's pretty hard to refute.
Mm.
I wasn't going to go that deep. I was just going to be happy that we got Supergirl. Granted, not my favorite costume, but definitely not my least favorite.
What's your least favorite Supergirl costume then?
I wasn't aware I was going to be on trial.
No, not on trial. I'm genuinely curious as to what your what you do and don't like in a Supergirl costume.
Honestly, the question.
Honestly, I'm not a fan of the later on midriff Supergirl, as I call it.
Right.
The early 2000s redesign with long sleeves, exposed stomach, and a mini skirt.
Okay.
Just, it doesn't make sense to me.
The Michael Turner.
It does, but it does. Yes, the Michael Turner. Thank you. I couldn't think of his name.
I have a question about Giganta. Does anyone know more about Giganta than me? Because I didn't know she was based on it. She was a evolved gorilla lady who goes giant. I didn't know that.
No, that was news to me as well. I always just thought she was, a giant woman, and that was it.
I knew that, but I knew it because of Who's Who.
Oh.
The Super Friends cartoon never went into it. She was just a woman who grows giant.
Yes.
Okay. If only there was some sort of podcast to tell us about Who's Who, but we just have to work it out for ourselves. Anyway.
I'm sure there's one somewhere that runs, you know, 4 hours long and they talk about reject superheroes that form their own club in the 30th century.
Ah.
Somewhere. Yeah,
I'd listen to that.
Right. I think that's another interesting thing about this series is that if you know your DC history, you will be rewarded by all the little cameos in the background and, you know, by all the different villains, and that if you don't, you've got a lot of head scratching going on.
Do you think it really matters though? I mean, it's like Easter eggs. If you know what things are, you get more out of it. But if you don't know, does it really upset you or? Does it make you angry, Mike? That's
Not angry, but just a bit like... I mean, yes, I know enough about the DC Universe, but then again, there's so much going on each of these pages. It's like, wow, could they have tried to cram any more people into that one scene? It's just... I'm just going to say it. Paul, as much as I love you for sending me the trade paperback so I could read this, I'm not a massive fan of this story. And ooh. I think it's a bit overambitious for what I was trying to do. I think it maybe could have been two issues shorter. And I think maybe they could have, reined in some of the panel layouts and because yeah, there's just as it goes on, there's just so much going on in each page. And Paul, you said you when you were reading the hardcovers that you completely forgot what happened in the first one. You know, I'm reading this all in one trade and I'm trying to remember, okay, wait, who went where and why did they grab that guy again? And that's just in one book, in one sitting. And I'm like, oh. Yeah, it's an okay story. It's not the worst comic I've ever read, but it didn't blow me away, I guess.
Well, I must admit, I got a lot more out of it rereading it for this podcast series. Mm-hmm. And certainly the individual episodes have enhanced it because they've pointed out things that I didn't notice, little plot developments that are conveyed subtly in the story and the art that I hadn't picked up on and things like that. So that's happened several times listening to our comrades with their shows, mm-hmm. which has been really amazing. So,
yeah, kudos to everyone involved in the crossover this year. I'll admit I had to stop listening to them because I had never read Justice before. And I wanted to keep some surprises. I was like, oh, hang on. I'm almost halfway through all the podcasts. I should really stop listening now so I can actually, leave something to be a surprise. So,
right. And I don't understand what's on Luther's top. He looks like he's got little fluoro lights on his vest in like an X pattern.
Well, wouldn't that be his force field generator?
I don't know. It could just be at a rave.
Oh, God.
I'm just curious, does Alex Ross not like Jason Todd at all?
Oh, I think Alex Ross has an era that he's comfortable in. Like he doesn't like the new Justice League, so that's why Firestorm's not in it. Mm-hmm. So he likes all these elements from a very comfortable Silver Age setting, outside of that.
Yeah. Well, when Green Lantern restores all the civilians back to normal, the one woman asked, "Are you the Robin? Like, are there more than one running around, or is she just so in shock?"
Yeah. Okay.
But it's kind of like subtext that's thrown in your face. I don't like any other Robins. You are the Robin,
yeah,
despite
we're only
no other Robins Robin. Running around.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. Maybe that's something they wanted to get across. But I will throw in another Jim Kruger fact. He is writing the Gotham radio backups in Mother Panic that are coming out under Young Animal.
Okay.
And with Phil Hester art. So, another fact that I dropped that no one knows what to do with.
Other than admit maybe I should be reading Mother Panic then.
I'm planning to get the trade of that, so okay. I'm holding off. But,
I'm going to have another gripe once I've got the opportunity. I've read Green Lantern for quite a few years. Okay, I basically have everything Green Lantern from Geoff Johns' Rebirth up until the start of Green Lantern Rebirth, the current one, right?
Yeah.
I have a good idea as to what the Green Lantern ring can and cannot do. And I'm still a bit stunned as to how convenient it is that it has the ability to wipe minds and destroy nanotechnology just by letting out a blast of the Emerald energy.
Oh, in the Silver Age, he was doing all sorts of things.
Yeah, I guess that's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the source of this is. But yeah, now the Green Lantern ring could do whatever the writer wanted it to do at any given time.
This is true, See, aren't you glad I raised this?
Yeah. It's, what would you call it? Comic book science, Mike.
Ah, of course. Forgot all about comic book science. So. Yeah, it just seemed a bit too convenient almost. But you're right, it's Silver Age wackiness, So
yeah. I'm concerned about Brainiac's outfit. In all of these, he looks like he's wearing a hospital gown, and if you get the right angle, you'll see his green butt sticking out the back.
Oh, what?
That's what it looks like. I know it's sort of a lab coat thing, but it really looks like he's just, run out of the ICU.
Well, see, that's another detail I missed because there's so much else going on. How closely were you looking at those pages?
Yeah, I just flip through when you start talking.
Oh.
Anyway.
Charming.
I will say it now. I think my favourite page is the bit where Rita smacks Giganta. And it's probably my favourite part of the entire story from beginning to end. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a big call, but I'm picking up that big phone and I'm dialing.
Right.
Anyway, so in conclusion, Clinton, do you want to wrap up with your thoughts?
Pretty much just everything that you guys have already said. I'll agree. Definitely could have been an issue or two shorter. I do enjoy the massive fight spread across 40-something pages here, but at the same time, it did kind of feel like it was about time to wind it up.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I love Alex Ross's art. I prefer Kingdom Come over Justice, but at the same time, I get a lot more recognizable characters in Justice. So,
true.
Yeah. Take the good with the bad.
Yeah, I'd say Kingdom Come is the more satisfying read. But yeah, I did need to flip to the back and look at the directory of who's who throughout that series because there's all these new characters. I didn't know their names. But, I mean, I was interested in that with Kingdom Come. But, I mean, I find Justice is more rewarding the more attention I give it. And certainly I think the first 10 chapters are pretty amazing. And it's only in this one that I feel like the story just starts to get away from them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm super glad we're doing it and talking about it, and you know, fabulous podcasting buddies talking about it as well. So, yeah, if you want to hear the next part, which is chapter 12, the final chapter, we recommend you do. Don't give up here. I mean, you've come this far. The last part will be on Justice's First Dawn with Mike Peacock. So, yeah, get involved with that.
Yeah, I think we're all agreed that overall it's a good series. It loses, as Clinton said, it loses, and Paul, as you've said, it loses a little bit of steam at this issue as it's getting right towards the end. But overall, even though I have a few gripes about it, and it's the first time I've read it, so maybe I will get more out of it when I reread it at some stage. Yeah, it's been an interesting series to go through. And as you said, Paul, great work done by the other shows involved this year. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes out for JL May next year.
Oh, yeah, well, there are discussions behind the scenes.
Oh, really?
But I did enjoy your turn, Mike, as Savannah in the Silver and Gold episode.
Thank you. Yes, yes. Check out part 9 of this year's JL May crossover. I believe it's episode 28. Of Silver and Gold, where they cover issue 9, and yes, that was done as a radio drama, a radio play, if you will, where a cavalcade of stars took on different roles in that issue. And I have to say, my favorite part was probably Shag as Batman.
Oh, he was so good.
Really good Batman. He really was. So,
yes, but I don't know who that model was who was playing Mary Marvel, but she sounded so sexy.
She's hot. She's not really. But yes, it was fun making a guest appearance as Dr. Savannah. Although in the initial discussions, I think Jay really wanted me to try and make him sound like Donald Trump. And I tried it and I was like, you know what? No, I can't do that to the listeners. I just could not.
Got to follow your own muse there.
That's right. Yes, yes. So yeah. All right. I think we've explained that. And well done, everyone involved in JL May this year.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Clinton.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you both for having me, and thank you for everybody who did JL May, that thing that we're talking about and participating in
that podcast crossover thing.
Yeah. Yes.
The end of the world is approaching. Soon the planet will be engulfed in a nuclear Armageddon, and the only people that can prevent this from happening are considered to be the greatest villains of all time. The only thing standing in their way is the Justice League. In 2005...
Wait a second. Are we sure about that date this time?
Yeah, it's 2005. We're sure this time.
Let's just be perfectly clear. I hate all of you so much.
Okay, good. Got that. All right.
In 2005, DC Comics began publishing a 12-issue bi-monthly comic called Justice. Written by Jim Kruger with art by Alex Ross and Doug Braithwaite, this series was essentially a Super Friends for adults. And now another group of Super Friends has come together to discuss all 12 issues in a podcasting crossover called JL May 2017. The excitement begins on the April 30th episode of the Fire and Water podcast and continues into Supermates, the Idlehead of Diabolu podcast, Views from the Long Box, the Pulp to Pixel podcast, the Lantern cast, the Shazam cast, Comic Reflections, the Silver and Gold podcast, The Power of Fishnets, Waiting for Doom, and Justice's First Dawn, J.L. May 2017. Last year, they covered the beginning of the Justice League. This year, they discuss and review the League's toughest battle. The coverage begins on April 30th on the Fire and Water podcast, located at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Now you know it's a special ep, we're just sticking to our regular stuff, and at this point in the show we regularly do the Mailbag of Doom, and this week we were asking everybody to respond to the question, what is your favourite Justice League story? So people gave us answers on Twitter and Facebook and websites and stuff, and this is what we heard from them. So the first person to respond was Mike Lapine, who is at Lapine is Me on Twitter, and he said, the first arc of this book or Justice League Earth 2 by Morrison and Quietly, and he put in JLA Classified, which had the, I think it's the Grant Morrison story with the Ultramarines, which is a pretty cool one, and Earth 2, which was the Quietly one. I think the Quietly one is probably the better story, but they're both very good, and I enjoy rereading them.
So Moby One says that Morrison wowed with widescreen JL, and Wade's Tower of Babel was amazing. But for me, New Frontier best captures the essence of the team.
Nice.
Yeah, no, New Frontier is amazing.
That's a good one, yeah. We then heard from Sergeant Merica, at Sergeant Merica, who said, the Kruger-Ross Justice story where the villains try to save the world.
Ah, we should look at that one.
I bet you there'd be a bunch of shows interested in looking at that one.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, cool. Maybe.
At least 12 of them.
Yeah.
We heard from some bloke called Dr. Ange 70, or Ange, as he says on Twitter, and he said, JLA 200 is going to be a very easy answer for many of us, but I'll break away and say Rock of Ages from Grant Morrison is a close second. I have read JLA 200. It's a bit old, but I thought it was okay.
Okay.
Clinton probably knows it better than me.
Right.
Actually, I'm just going to plead the fifth on that one.
Right.
I think it's Rob Kelly's favorite comic ever.
I think it's Rob Kelly's favorite piece of words ever.
Ah, piece of words.
Yes. His favorite sentence, his favorite paragraph, his favorite spoken, read, anything.
Wow.
Anything from the English language.
Gosh.
Take that, Shakespeare.
Doug Zavisha says, I don't even have to think about this one anymore. And I cannot quite see what he is linking.
I believe it's Justice League of America 191 and 192.
Which has got the Red Tornado doing all sorts of stuff. He's probably crying and about to get destroyed.
Ooh. Nasty. Craig 101 at Craig R. McD said, it's a tie between Justice League International number 11 from 1987 and Justice League Europe numbers 26 to 28 versus Starro.
I must revisit those. I have them and I don't think I've read them since I first got them. That's it's got the whole Justice League. It sort of redoes the cover of Justice League number one, where everyone's just, you know, giving attitude to the camera, but they're all got Starros on their face. So right. It's got a cool cover. Yeah, I like that one.
My time for a confession. I have never read either series.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep, shocker, yep.
Oh,
I'm going to say I'm young, you know?
Yeah, you haven't read all the comics that we have, so...
Yeah, but then again, I'm sure there's comics I read that you guys haven't read.
That is true.
You know?
That is true.
Have I ever told you about a series called Alex and Ada?
Yes, you have. Yes, I have okay, read
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, who else did we hear from Paul?
We heard from at Classic JLA, which is Justice First Dawn, which I believe is Mike Peacock. Ooh. In the library with the candlestick. No, and he said, the one that started my path towards irreparable JLA love was the Seven Soldiers of Victory trilogy from JLA 100 to 102. That's even older.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. These people all read comics before I did.
Treasury Comics, which is our friend Rob Kelly over at the Fire and Water Network, just leaves a big comment that says, boom, with Justice League of America number 200. Once again, reaffirming that this is apparently the greatest work of literature known to man.
Right.
And next up, we heard from you. You can say your own one at the end. How about that?
All right.
Yeah.
And then I'll skip ahead to Chad Bokelman's answer. Chad's at, how the hell do I say that? Kagan Ali?
Cage Gnarly, I'd say.
Cage.
Yeah, he says it's Cage Gnarly.
Okay, there we go. Apologies, Chad. He said, actually, I'm kind of partial to these two issues of JLA. And he sent us issue covers for numbers
29
and 30 of the Justice League of America. And they're kind of really old, too.
They look really old.
And showing the Justice League facing off against the villains from Earth 3.
Yeah. Never read those.
No, before all of our time, I think.
Yeah. We heard from Bob Garwin-Ellis, who said the first New 52 arc, and then he showed, put in a gif of all these Justice League superheroes laughing together.
I didn't mind that, you know? I was a bit of a fan of the New 52.
I think it found its feet with like Throne of Atlantis, but it took a while. Yeah,
that was a good one. But yeah, I thought it was a nice start to that. So each to their own, Bob Gar. You know, every opinion is valid to a point.
Yeah. Oh, Paul Clinton's got one from a Strakus one.
Oh God.
Yeah, leave it, Mew Tech Rink. How in the world do you come up with names like that?
I believe it's his full name, and he just does a different anagram every week.
Yeah, we know his name is Kevin something. So there's, you can see the K in Rink.
Anyway. All right. Well, he says that the entire run of the DCAU Justice League / Justice League Unlimited show is his favorite.
Oh, they're so good. And they've just been reissued on video around. I've seen them in all the cheap stores lately.
Yes, and I haven't got them yet.
Yeah, they're so good.
Mm.
So good.
We then heard from Martin Gray at Mart Gray, and his answer was JLA number 144, The Secret Origin of the Justice League -1. Still one of my favorite comics ever, says Martin.
And looking at the cover, it looks like the Challengers of the Unknown and Kongorilla and the Vigilante, the one on the motorbike, the cowboy on the motorbike.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. Are those Black Hawks in there too?
Yeah, it could be.
Wow.
Wow. I've never read that either.
I'm just going to ask who the -1 was, because I haven't read that one.
It's like a party, but you can't bring someone.
Well, yeah, it looks like a party on that cover. So, you know, very violent party. Anyway, who else did we hear from, Paul?
We heard from our friend Jay Jones, FKA Jason, from the Silver and Gold podcast, who was involved with episode 9 of JLMA. Anyway, he said, although I loved Kingdom Come, I think my absolute favorite JLA story was The Nail. What can I say? I'm a sucker for alternate realities. The Nail. I like The Nail. That was a good story.
That was a really good story, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to spoil it. Jimmy Olsen's the baddie. There you go, everyone.
Oh, you bastard.
Okay, Big Tim Styles tells us that his favorite Justice League story is obviously JL Ape. Hashtag genius.
Sweet Arthur Adams cover. That's, you know, pity he didn't do the interior art. But yeah, I do like that crossover. I've got a soft spot. The Martian Manhunter issue has The Brain and Mallor in it.
Oh.
Martian Manhunter Annual number 2.
Right.
Hmm.
Another series I have not read. JL Ape. Again, I'm so young.
Not read JL Ape. What's wrong with you? It's JL Ape, man.
Okay, when did JL Ape come out?
1999.
Okay, I would have been in the height of X-Men mania maybe then.
Oh, no.
When I was, you know, I've said this before, I was like a big Marvel guy before I discovered DC, really, you know. So I'm sorry. I've learned the error of my ways. DC's
shame, shame.
Shame. Shame, Michael. Oh, look, we heard from Chad Berkelman again. And he said he's actually a big fan of the Justice League of America prose novels they did a few years back. Graphic Audio did adaptations of them too.
Ah.
Okay, cool.
Cool. I need good things to listen to. We heard from Fractures on Facebook this time, and he said Cosmic Odyssey, Jim Starlin, Mark Mignola, Garzon and Olaf. Mignola drawing the New Gods, Mignola drawing Batman, Thanagarian's Massacre by Orion, Bug, 2 exclamation marks. Green Lantern kills a planet, Mignola drawing Batman, Batman uses a payphone, Dr. Fate, Ectrogan, the list goes on and on, plus Mignola draws Batman, and Batman punches Orion. Oh, yeah. I love Cosmic Odyssey. I'm right with him there. I think it's that would introduce me to a lot of characters in that story, and I dug it. Dig it. I still do.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Okay, also on Facebook, Jared Driscoll said that his favorite Justice League story is issue 5, where Guy Gardner and Batman had a fist fight. I'm going to assume that's, you know, the Justice League International run that I don't know anybody who runs a podcast of.
Someone should do one about that. I mean, there's a one punch in that, I believe.
Yeah.
One punch.
One punch.
Sounds like something's missing. Anyway.
Still on Facebook, we also heard from Darren Sutherland, and he said, as Aquaman fans, Ruth and I both choose the Throne of Atlantis as our favorite Justice League story, the comic version and not that horrible animated adaptation.
Ah.
I haven't seen the cartoon version, but yeah, I did enjoy the comic one. Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Mm. And good to hear the Sutherlands.
Yes.
Or the Sutherland in this case.
Yeah.
Well, I hear when they get together with Ryan Daly, they fight.
Yeah. Oh, they fight all the time. Yeah. Fighting constantly.
Terrible.
All
right, Clinton, what's your favorite Justice League story?
Well, I am a big fan of the Morrison run, obviously. There's a few others in there. I have to look up my answer again because I kind of forgot what I said.
Destiny's
End. Yeah, definitely any of the JLA, JSA team-ups. Obsidian Age was a big draw for me, but probably my favorite is actually the 4-part Destiny's Hand story in the Dan Jurgens era in the 90s.
Oh, that was really good. Yeah, that was when Bloodwind was in the team, wasn't it?
Yeah, and at the end of the storyline, Bloodwind's revealed to be the Martian Manhunter.
Oh, we're just spoiling things here and there. Oh, sorry.
Well, I don't need to look that one up now, do I?
Sorry. But I'm sure Frank would have told you, you know, a long time ago anyway.
What about you, Mike?
I found this question.
You read any Justice League?
Justice who? I found this one really difficult because there were just so many good ones. Even as we've seen in the answers we've received this episode. But I am going to have to go for the New Frontier, mainly for Darwin Cook's art. I love that old retro style, and it's a great adventure as well. So, yeah, I'll say New Frontier.
Oh,
although nice. I could have gone on for ages with even more, but, you know, I won't go all frack on everyone.
It's not the time and the place.
No. What about you, Paul? What's yours?
I'm going to go, it's probably not the best one, but it's one I have such an incredible soft spot for. It's a special prestige format from early 2000s, 2003, but it's called A JLA Welcome to the Working Week, and it's written by Patton Oswalt with pencils by Patrick Gleason. And it's a really cool little story about this civilian who ends up civilians get rescued and they end up on the Justice League watchtower, and this kid gets left behind and sort of skulks around watching the Justice League heroes when they don't know that he's watching. And it's a really cool little comic, and it has some really lovely observations about the characters. It's a bit like Astro City, where you're seeing them through regular people's eyes. But it's a really cool story. Patton Oswalt writes quite a good Justice League story. And, it's one no one really talks about, but I love it. And, really good. Recommend it.
Okay. Well, when did you say this one came out again?
Oh, it's about early 2000s.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't think I've ever heard of that story. So, yeah, clearly no one's talking about it.
Yeah. I've never heard of that one either, tell you the truth.
It's about, it's one of those prestige formats, so it's only about 60 pages. At that stage, it was when they sort of realized that the Justice League was a real thing they could sell. So they kept bringing out, sort of prestige format stories written by people who weren't Graham Morrison. So it came in that sort of wave.
Right.
Yeah. So, but cool stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. I win the Obscurity Award.
Congratulations. Well done, sir. Well,
have fun hunting for it.
Oh, dearie me. Well, I think that's pretty much it for this episode of Waiting for Doom. Clinton, thank you very much for joining us. It's been great having you on and chatting with you. Where can people find your good work, sir?
People can find me online. I am on Twitter at CoffeeComicsBLG. You can find my podcast, the Coffee and Comics Podcast, on iTunes and at coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com. And if people feel so inclined to shoot me an email, they can email coffeeandcomicspodcast@gmail.com.
I've got to ask, when was the first time you realized coffee went so well with comics?
When I was desperate for a name for the blog. And then I realized I like comics. I like coffee. I assumed nobody had that name, but there actually was one more. And then I just thought, oh, what the heck? I'll go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah.
And it just kind of stuck. It seemed to be a workable concept.
Cool.
It's better than coffee and moshing.
Or moshing and comics,
Yeah, either
but
way.
Both alternates have, their own forms of doom. So, yeah. But yes, if you want to find out more about this year's JLMA, and if you haven't caught up yet, the shows that have gone through the series this year have done an issue each. So if you start with Fire and Water podcast with their episode 193, then move on to Supermates podcast, then Idlehead of Diabolu, Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, the Pulp to Pixel podcast, the Lantern Cast, Shazam Cast, Comic Reflections, Silver and Gold podcast, we'll get you up to issue 9, the Power of Fishnets, covered issue 10, so just for us. We've just covered issue 11, and as Paul mentioned earlier, head over to Justice's First Dawn. That podcast will be covering the big finale of Justice the series.
That's Dawn, not porn. Just saying.
Did I say porn?
You just did then.
And getting back to more Doom Patrol related stuff, Paul, are we covering the Doom Patrol in more than 8 panels next week?
Sort of. It's a bit sort of. There's a comic which has it features one member of the Doom Patrol fairly prominently. It's a 4-issue miniseries. It's a weird one. And we're going to have a look at it. And I'm going to do all the heavy lifting because I don't think you've read it.
This has been a real embarrassing episode for revealing what I haven't read.
You are not alone in not having read this series. It's a bit of a stinker. But it is DC Universe Decisions, the political voting comic miniseries. Ooh. So that's coming up. Anyway, and in honor of that, we have a special question of the week and a timely question of the week because the question is, which fictional character would you want running your country?
Right.
I think I have one right now.
Anyway, so that's coming up on next week's Waiting for Doom. Thank you, Clinton, for joining us.
Thank you again for having me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can send your answers to @WFDpod, which is Wilfred, our Sentient Show Twitter account. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we have the Facebook page, which is all on Facebook. And, of course, Doug's site, My Greatest Adventure, 80.blogspot.com, which has everything you could ever want to know about the Doom Patrol, except for what's coming up in like 3 months' time in the issue that we haven't read, things like that. But, you know, it's not perfect, but it's the best we've got.
It works.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks everyone. Yeah.
Thanks Paul, thanks Clinton, thanks listeners. Catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.